Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's just a different tension in the air. A different kind of a feel once the puck drops in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And just minutes after the final game of the five wraps up on this Wednesday night, we get the NBA playoff schedule. And so it's hot and heavy now. This is what happens. Hoops and hockey, first week in April, and it is on. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. I don't yet have the answer to the question of whether or not the in-studio microphone is fixed. We will find out. Already, we've seen salty, spicy, edgy, a guy who got hit in the face with a puck. It's the perfect way to start the NHL postseason. Because it's the Cup, the Stanley Cup chase is underway, and so I can't wait to hear from you. Lots of you sending me tweets on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. Your impression of the first night of the Stanley Cup postseason, and momentarily we will give you the schedule for the opening round of the NBA playoffs, which will begin on Saturday and Sunday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio, and we're inside the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Our phone number is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. And the month now all of a sudden to me feels different. We are also hours away from the first golfers teeing off at the Masters at Augusta National. And so it's on. That's what it is now. No more messing around. I don't have time for broken microphones. And so things are completely different moving forward through the rest of this month. And then obviously on into May. And last year, it was mid-June when we had both the Stanley Cup and the NBA championship won on back-to-back nights. And so it feels electric to me. It feels different, and I'm excited to share that with you. Let's run through the NBA playoff schedule. Since it's hot off the presses for many of you, this will be the first that you're hearing of it. We have got, well, here are the seeds. We have got in the East, Milwaukee, Toronto, Philadelphia, Boston, your top four seeds, which means those are the franchises that we'll be hosting in the first round. Indiana, Brooklyn, Orlando, and Detroit. Congratulations to Dwayne Casey, who leads the Pistons back to the playoffs for the first time in several years, but his first season post-Toronto Raptors. So they end up as the eighth seed after winning on the road in New York on Wednesday night. So here's what you've got in the Eastern Conference. The postseason will begin with the Nets at the Sixers on Saturday afternoon. And if you're wondering, they straddle these games. And so you have one game at a time going through the weekend. But the first one will be 2:30 Eastern time, 2:30 Philadelphia time. That's Nets and Sixers to start out the postseason on Saturday. That's followed by the Orlando Magic at the Toronto Raptors. Always a great scene when Toronto has a home game in the NBA playoffs. And will it be different this year? It's a completely altered landscape in the Eastern Conference with no Cavaliers, no LeBron James. Actually, neither the Cavs nor LeBron are in the playoffs, which I'm not sure many people would have thought that was possible to start the year. Not the Cavs portion, but certainly the LeBron James portion. No LBJ in the playoffs for the first time since 2005. Then you've got the first two Western Conference games. The eight seed, the Clippers, at the two-time defending champ, Golden State. And so we knew the Warriors had locked up that overall number one seed in the West. And because of the jostling the last couple of days in the rest of the conference, the Clippers slipped to the eight seed. So it's Golden State, Denver, Portland as the three seed in the West. And then the Houston Rockets, who really hurt themselves with that loss against the Thunder on Tuesday night. Those are your top four seeds. The Utah Jazz, the Oklahoma City Thunder, the sixth seed. The Spurs end up as the seventh seed, then the Clippers as the eight. Your fourth game on Saturday is the Spurs at the Nuggets. And then re-racking on Sunday, the game start a little bit earlier, but it's the Pacers at the Celtics. Big news about the Celtics losing a starter for at least 4 weeks. We'll get to that news coming up. Also have the Thunder at the Blazers, and then the final two games on Sunday, the Pistons at the Bucks. That'll be a primetime matchup, 7 o'clock Eastern time, so 7 o'clock Detroit time. But for Milwaukee, Wisconsin, a 6 o'clock tip for Giannis, the top seed, the Milwaukee Bucks, and that's followed by the Jazz at the Houston Rockets. So those are your first 2 days of the NBA playoffs, starting Saturday and then Sunday. Going to be really exciting just to see how these series in the Eastern Conference play out. And we always say the Western Conference is wide open. So it's a different landscape this year in the NBA for obvious reasons. The Warriors look vulnerable, at least to me. Maybe not everyone else feels that way, but they do have a different starting lineup, which now features a Boogie Cousins, but also their bench has turned over yet again for what is the third consecutive season. And so we'll see if there's a team that can push them early in the playoffs, or maybe they end up going 7 games in the Western Conference Finals again if they get that far. So the basketball playoffs and the hockey postseason going together, going hot and heavy early on. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. In hockey, wowzers. Let's get some sudden death overtime to start out the postseason, why don't we? So really cool just to see some of the fresh blood in the NHL postseason, and that includes the Islanders for the first time in a couple of years. And I heard this stat that blew me away just because of the way they've changed buildings and the way that the franchise has been on the road for a good portion of its recent playoff appearances. The Islanders were starting the Stanley Cup playoffs at Nassau Coliseum for the first time since 1988. So again, thinking about the building changes, but also thinking about the fact that they haven't been a team in position to host. And so just an amazing atmosphere at the barn. That's what they call the Nassau Coliseum. Hosting the Pittsburgh Penguins, who of course have had a lot of recent playoff success. And this was a game in which the Islanders had to take the lead 4 times. 4 times. So they would get a lead and the Penguins would come back. And then they would go ahead again and the Penguins would come back. In fact, the tying goal for the Pittsburgh Penguins in the third period, the one that sent it into overtime, happened with 90 seconds left. And so I was feeling it right then. Feel a little sudden death already to start out the postseason. Now, this wasn't the first game to start in the playoffs, but it was within a half hour of the Lightning and the Blue Jackets, which we will get to. So we'll get to that Penguins goal because it was silent inside the barn after the Penguins tied it with 90 seconds left. Thank goodness for the DVR these days. I walked into my kitchen I was putting my laundry from the washer into the dryer. So I walked into the kitchen and I'm listening to the games on my TV. I'm listening to it and all of a sudden it goes from this crazy din to silence, as much as thousands of people can be silent in this kind of an atmosphere. And so I knew something had happened with the Penguins. So I walk back and I'm able to rewind and see the goal. So the Penguins force overtime. And then, well, they force overtime barely. Because with 3 seconds left in regulation, Josh Bailey clangs a puck off the post. And they end up in overtime because he grabs iron instead of getting the back of the net. Now, I was talking to you earlier this week about redemption stories, of course, because they're my favorite ones in sports. I don't know how much redemption was needed in overtime, but it was pretty cool that it was the same guy with the opportunity to end the game just a few minutes after he missed the chance to end the game.
Flipped it ahead for Matt Barzal. 2-on-1 with Eberle in the Penguins' own left circle. Barzal all alone in front. Deeks shoots and scores! The Islanders win it in overtime! Josh Bailey knocked it in! And New York wins it 4-3 to take game 1!
Chris King with the Final call on the Islanders Radio Network. Hopefully we'll get a little more of the... Sometimes when we start out the hockey playoffs, our calls are not great. So looking, hopefully, to get some longer calls that will give you kind of the atmospheres inside these arenas, because it's phenomenal. This is the time of the year when fans bring everything they've got. And so Bailey scores with 4.5 minutes gone by the extra period, and it was the fourth time that the Islanders went ahead of the Pittsburgh Penguins, but this time it was the capper for them. So the Islanders take the lead in that series 4-3. That was the score, obviously, not the fact that they are up 4-3, because that would be a game seven, which would be cool. Some of you have found me on Twitter and told me that you believe this series will, in fact, end up as a seven-game series, so we'll find out. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. That was fun. That was playoff hockey. It was sudden death in their opening game, and so hopefully it sets the stage for yet another awesome series. But if you were looking for a stunner on the first night of the playoffs, holy cow, if you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, you feel like you just got kicked in the teeth. The Lightning scored a shorthanded goal. I think it was 3-4 minutes into the game. So this was the very first game that started. Now think about the Lightning, 126 points. They were the President's Trophy winners in what felt like February. They have had by far one of the best regular seasons in recent memory. But they tied the record for most wins all time. Now, I know some of you have said to me, oh, it's the President's Trophy curse. I don't actually believe in curses, so that's not going to work for me. But I do know that they came out like a house on fire and built a 3-0 lead. And this is at home in Tampa. But after they had that lead, their head coach, John Cooper, indicated that they started playing in a way that wasn't normally how they play. They tried to outscore the Blue Jackets the rest of the way instead of be protective and strong with that lead. And they just got out of their game. And so they end up watching the Blue Jackets come back. And they score one goal in the second period. But I mean, who's worried about that, right? You still have a 3-1 lead. Though, if you ask a lot of hockey experts, they will tell you the 2-goal lead in the Stanley Cup playoffs is the most precarious. It's the one that sets you up big time. But they move on into the third period, and it's Columbus that's able to rebound from what was a terrible start. And they score 3 goals in the third period. In fact, they come all the way back and they win this thing. With just under 6 minutes to play, it's Seth Jones with the go-ahead goal on a power play. So fitting, right, that their initial goal that they gave up to the Lightning was a shorty on a power play. Alex Killorn was able, it was brilliant. He pokes the puck away and has half the rink to be able to skate in. It was almost like it was a penalty shot. Just him and Sergei Bobrovsky. And so they give up the initial goal to the Lightning on their own power play, but they had to make good with Seth Jones on the power play late in the third period. So this is stunning. Like I said, the Lightning are far and away the best team in the league this year. 62 wins. And they go up 3-0 in the opening period, but they could not hold on. And you may remember what happened last year. The Blue Jackets took the first 2 games against the eventual Stanley Cup champions in the Washington Capitals. They couldn't go on and win that series, but they certainly do have some experience punching top seeds in the mouth.
Our mentality was, you know, we wanted to outscore them tonight. And instead of build the lead and then shut them down. And when you have the mentality of you want to outscore teams, these are things that can happen.
So that's head coach John Cooper as the Blue Jackets come all the way back from a 3-goal deficit to stun the Lightning in Tampa. Only the 27th NHL team to ever overcome a 3-goal deficit or more. So at least a 3-goal deficit to win a playoff game in regulation, no doubt. So that's just a snippet of what happened on the opening night of the Stanley Cup postseason. We'll get into some of the Western Conference games. It's also a good reminder as we start out that home ice doesn't mean a whole lot. For the San Jose Sharks, it did mean something against the Vegas Golden Knights. Of course, these two teams met last year in the playoffs in the second round. The Sharks were determined to take advantage of their home ice, even if it meant scoring a goal with your face. The captain did exactly that. Thanks so much for tuning in. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Good forecheck by Kane. Gets behind the net. Thornton into the front. Flash it. Score! SAP Center explodes as Marc-Edouard Vlasic races into the breach, takes the pass from Joe Thornton, and makes it 3-0 San Jose.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
In the second period of the Sharks' opening game against the Vegas Golden Knights, which if you ask the two coaches, they will tell you it's not really a rematch of the second round last year. However, the big difference, in addition to some personnel changes, is that it was SAP Center hosting the opener of this series instead of it being in Vegas. And the Sharks jump out to a 3-0 lead, similar to what the Tampa Bay Lightning did, though they were able to hold off the charging Knights later. Mark Stone did have a pair of goals to help make the Sharks uncomfortable there for a little bit in the third period. But an empty netter by Tomas Hertl got the Sharks out in front, and they take the opener. Dan Rusinowski with the call on the San Jose Sharks radio network. Now, this one had a little drama early on, and this makes me laugh. I know this is just the rules of hockey, and it's fine, but it was a wrist shot from Brett Burns. I think it was about 14 minutes into the opening period, and it gets deflected and glances off of Joe Pavelski's face. At least that's what it looked like on replay. However, glancing off of his face left him with a fat lip and some blood. And it sounds like he's going to need to go to the dentist. So it looks like he lost a tooth or two as well. So he actually gets credit for the goal, not Brett Burns, who, again, was the initiator of the shot. One of the hardest shots in hockey. And it just happens to be from the stick of a defenseman. This wasn't even a slap shot. It was a wrist shot. So poor Joe Pavelski, he doesn't get knocked down, but he leaves the ice. It takes him a while to come back. And when he does, he comes back with this big plastic mask around his face that kind of protects his jaw, but it also has a little hole where his mouth is so that he can drink water. And he did play the rest of the way. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. First night of the Stanley Cup postseason. Love to hear from you, your reaction. These series, some of these are going to be nasty. And I don't mean this was shark on shark crime. So I don't mean that particular incident, but the Sharks and the Knights do not like each other. And there was all kind of extracurricular activity initially. And in fact, pretty much the entire game, the officials were letting them play as well. And so it was scrappy and it was chippy and it was spicy. It's my kind of hockey. After Hours on CBS Sports Radio and on Facebook, Joe Pavelski, who's the captain for the San Jose Sharks, was doing a different kind of an interview post-game following the win.
It's nice to hear the fans cheer. Silver lining sort of thing. Should I go to the pile or not? I knew everything was messed up there for a little bit. But I think somewhat fortunate.
He says he's somewhat fortunate, but definitely wasn't sure if he should go pile up with the rest of the Sharks following the win. As you can imagine, he was afraid of getting hit. Ouch. I mean, you always tell me that NHL players are the toughest in sports. Brent Burns, by the way, was the guy who glanced. Well, it got deflected into Pavelski's face, but it came from Brent Burns. Now, the prettier goal for Burns was on a 3-on-3, just some really sweet weaving by the Sharks that left Burns all alone on the right side for a shot. So he ends up with a goal and an assist in this win.
I'm keeping the dentist in business, so that's, he goes to the hard areas, that's why he scores so many goals, and it's, the front of the net's not a fun place to be, but he's one of the best in the world at it, and the other one was a great play by Carl and Hertz.
So Burns on NBC California, we're keeping the dentist in business. I mean, that is one way to look at it. Oh, ouch. Can you imagine how Pavelski's going to feel when he wakes up in the morning? And how fat the lip might be. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. The Nashville Predators were hosting the opener of their series against the Dallas Stars. And Nashville did jump out to an early lead, but it did not hold.
Out towards the line, held by Klingberg. Finds Haskin in a shot. That one scored! Haskin did it again, and the Stars have the lead.
The Dallas Stars get down 1-0, but they come back with a couple of third period goals. And Miro Heiskanen ends up with a couple of goals himself, including the go-ahead goal there early in the third period. So Stars have the 1-0 lead in the series against the Predators. And then St. Louis and Winnipeg also underway. And it's the Blues that take that game in Winnipeg. And so initially you end up with two of the road teams winning on this first night, three of the road teams, excuse me, winning on this first night. And I don't know, it'd be tough to say which of the professional sports has the least significance when it comes to the home ice, home court, home field advantage. That's a good argument. Maybe you can send me your tweets. Tell me what you think. A-Law Radio, and then also on our Facebook page. We could look at the numbers for sure. But I'm more interested in atmospheres and impact that having the home ice, home court, home field advantage has. Now, if you're in a place where the fans own it, whether it's Oracle, whether it's Kansas City, Arrowhead, of course, I know they lost in overtime to the Patriots in the AFC Championship, but generally a really strong home field advantage. If you're in a place where it matters to the fans, well, then it can matter on the playing surface. So what do you think in the postseason or just in general, which sport has the strongest home court, home ice, home field advantage? It's so awkward to say, but you know what I'm saying? The home advantage. And which sport doesn't? Where does it not matter as much? Again, on Twitter or Facebook, our phone number is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. Now, coming up next, we're going to spend some time in Los Angeles. The Lakers did their exit interviews. LeBron was not there because he was in Brooklyn, where it was LeBron, Chris Paul, Carmelo Anthony cheering on Dwayne Wade in his final game. So I briefly wondered whether or not the Lakers would have allowed LeBron to go if they had to play on Wednesday night, but it's a moot point because they didn't. And so instead, LeBron was at Brooklyn, was not part of the exit interviews, though according to sources, he was stunned by Magic Johnson's abrupt resignation. We'll get the latest from Lakerland coming up with our friend Michael Duarte in LA. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
There was plenty of talk of the drama at the Lakers exit interviews on Wednesday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227. It's brought to you by Geico with a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. We're excited to welcome our friend Michael Duarte, who covers all things Los Angeles for NBC LA, and that includes the Lakers and all the drama. And Michael, I know you were at the exit interviews on Wednesday, so what did you hear about the recent developments, most notably Magic Johnson abruptly resigning on Tuesday?
Yeah, Amy, of course, Tyson Chandler had a positive experience. He was with the Suns before. It's probably the one place you could go and then go to the Lakers and make it a positive experience. But I was there when Magic Johnson sidled past our media scrum last night after we had just finished interviewing Luke Walton for what we all believed as the media for the final time before the game as the Lakers head coach. And then, as Magic Johnson has done numerous times in his career and in his life, he dropped a bombshell of a press conference. And talking about those exit interviews today, a G League guard, Jamario Jones, said that he was asked about the last few games and the Lakers kind of upsetting some of the teams and even playing well last night. And he said, we wanted to go out with a bang. Well, they definitely went out with a bang, but it was Magic Johnson who lit the fuse. And all I can say about it, being there live and watching him speak to the media for 45 minutes, he was very candid, shockingly candid, I should say, but yet cryptic about some things that he was alluding to. He cried multiple times. He spoke in the third person multiple times. He rambled. He reminisced. He preached. He mourned. But overall, I would say the entire situation was very, very surreal and obviously shocking for everybody involved, including us there live.
So what do you believe about why he is stepping down from that post?
That's a great question. So there is the obvious answer, which was when Magic was hired back in February of 2017 to take this job. A lot of people at the time were more celebrating the firing of Jim Buss because they wanted him out. They wanted an scapegoat. And so it was Jeannie's brother Jim, who was running basketball operations for the years previously. Finally, he was gone. So it kind of overshadowed the choice of Magic Johnson because Magic is a legend here. As you like to talk about me being born and raised in L.A., I mean, Magic is one of my favorite players. I was in the original Cheers bar in Boston wearing a Magic Johnson jersey when Magic beat the Celtics. So, I mean, this is an idol and a legend of mine, but to hire somebody who he's got the charisma, he's got the personality, he's got the smile, and as he said in that 45-minute presser, impromptu presser last night, he likes to go in the room and close the deal. When he's face-to-face, person-to-person, that's what he's best at. But as far as being a basketball executive and scouting players and negotiating teams and recruiting talent and all these things and having to put the work and time in, I don't think he was necessarily cut out for that. I think it took a while for him to realize that. And I think as you saw and as he mentioned along the way, he wasn't happy in that role. He didn't feel like Magic was able to be the Magic Man that he knows. He likes to tweet, kind of like our president. He likes to talk about other players and congratulate players and go out there and be an ambassador for the game. And he couldn't do any of that. He talks about the Greek Freak. He talks about Giannis Antetokounmpo being the MVP and maybe winning a championship, and he gets fined. He talks about Paul George wanting to come home and play in L.A., and he gets fined. He wasn't cut out for this role. And there's a lot of other things I can get into from sources about why this decision came down. But ultimately, I think he figured this was just best for him to go back to being what he is. He doesn't need the money. He doesn't need the notoriety. He doesn't need to prove anything to anybody at this point in his life.
Michael Duarte of NBC LA with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. So guard Kentavious Caldwell-Pope said today, at the trade deadline, everybody kind of lost themselves, was referring to the fact that nearly half the team got traded away and all the drama that ensued. How much did you hear that honest opinion, that honest assessment today during exit interviews?
There was definitely discussion of that, the Anthony Davis debacle. My favorite quote came from the coach of the Alvin Gentry, the coach of the Pelicans last night, who said that whole trade debacle lost one man his job in Dale Demps, the former GM of the Pelicans, and the other guy resigned in
right.
Magic Johnson. Plus, Anthony Davis gets benched for half the season and said he got some bad advice. So that debacle had ripple effects throughout, but I think what happened with the players was a little overblown. Speaking to them yesterday and then again this morning at the exit interviews, it sounded like, yeah, they couldn't stay off of it. We're in a millennial generation where everybody's fixated on social media and they're on their phones 70% of the time, and so are these young players. And so they saw their names. They saw everything going on. Obviously, you could connect the dots and think that, hey, LeBron James is talking about Anthony Davis. He's having dinner with Anthony Davis after games. His childhood best friend and agent and kind of silent owner of Clutch Sports Agency, also represents Anthony Davis and is kind of behind this trade request. You could kind of connect the dots. And there was a little bit of, you know, upsetness and distrust, I would say, for about a week after the deadline, to the point where Magic felt like he needed to go in and address the locker room in Philadelphia after the trade deadline. And so there was a little bit of it, but I don't think that it was one of those things where it just lingered on for the season. After the deadline passes and you're in your job, you're still on the team, you got to be a professional and make that playoff push, which just didn't happen.
Mm. What happens with Luke Walton now?
That's a very good question. Magic omitted multiple times that he had the power and he had made the decision to fire Luke Walton, and that decision was going to come down today on Wednesday, or for you it would have been yesterday, but on Wednesday he was going to fire Luke Walton. Rightly or wrongly, whether he was cut out to have that power and responsibility or not, he chose to resign instead and pass the responsibility of firing Luke Walton onto Jeannie Buss and Rob Pelinka. So what happens now is the big question. Today at exit interviews, Rob Pelinka and Magic Johnson and Luke Walton, were behind the scenes conducting the interviews. They were there, staying in their current roles, still on in their current roles. They did not address the media. We requested to speak to them multiple times. We were told we could not speak to them. Instead, they paraded out the likes of these injured young stars and a lot of G League players and guys like Tyson Chandler, whose soundbite you played, but they did not step out in front of the cameras and in front of the media and try to stabilize this franchise or add anything to it. And that is very telling to me. But I do know from sources that Jeannie Buss loves Luke Walton. She likes Rob Pelinka. She's very high on both of them. She was behind the decisions to hire both of them. So if it was up to her, I don't think she chooses to fire either of them. If she decides to bring in an executive and give him the same power she had given to Magic Johnson to control and make the basketball decisions, and he decides to fire him, that's a different story. But I do know that Jeannie likes them both and did not want either of them fired.
So we're not sure that she's going to actually replace Magic?
No, I think that she will ultimately. I don't know. Is there going to be an interim person? But what I'm saying is until that happens, and I guess you have, until July 1st, right, June 31st, to really get someone in place, because then free agency opens and you need someone there in that role to get these free agencies once it opens. But up until that time, I don't think that Jeannie's going to be firing Luke or Rob in the next days until she figures out the plan further.
What are the question marks about the actual roster in the offseason?
Well, I mean, this roster is going to be gutted. Half the team is free agents. They were signed to one-year contracts to allow cap space. A lot of these guys signed these one-year deals to get a chance to play for LeBron and also play for the Lakers and on the brightest stage. I think it was Tyson Chandler who mentioned, you know, about playing for the Lakers. We're on TV more than anybody else, and we're not a playoff team. We haven't been in the playoffs for six seasons. So if you come here on these one-year deals like half of these players did, you get a chance to exhibit yourself and an opportunity to kind of showcase yourself to the rest of the league and get deals. I think guys like JaVale McGee, Lance Stephenson, those guys are going to get some big deals with other teams. Alex Caruso, a young guy who kind of proved himself, I think he's going to get offers from teams. So this roster outside of LeBron James is going to look a lot different, whether that means that whoever comes in to run the basketball operations here decides to trade some of these young players or they do go after these free agents. They're going to have to build around LeBron and whomever is still there once the dust settles on July 1st. So it's not going to look anything like it looked this year.
Michael Duarte of NBC LA with us here for just another 2 minutes. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. So obviously the Lakers drama has been the story the last couple of days. Is it overshadowing the Clippers in the playoffs or no?
Oh, absolutely. It's overshadowing the Clippers in the playoffs. And, I mean, it shouldn't, but obviously the Lakers are the number one draw here, even when it's bad. And as you saw yesterday on Tuesday, they still have all the drama surrounding them, even though the Clippers are the more functioning organization, the more stable organization, and in my opinion, the organization with the better future and also the better brand of basketball. Unfortunately, they're going to get a bad draw here. Even though they finish strong with a win, they're going to get the Golden State Warriors at the first round, the three-time champs. So it doesn't look like a very long playoff run for them, but they are there. I do want to go into some things about this Magic thing, if you get a chance, regarding what sources have told me what happened behind the scenes between him and Rob, if you do want to talk about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, sure. We have about, I mean, if you can go 2 minutes, we got 2 minutes.
Yeah, so sources kind of been relaying to me in the past 24 hours since this news broke. Magic alluded to it multiple times last night, saying he didn't like the backstabbing and the whispering that were going on within the organization. That was a red flag triggered to me that he was talking about Rob and looking out to this. And the reason it was that is because when Rob first got hired, some of my sources and contacts who are NBA agents said that Rob didn't have a very good reputation in the league, and especially with other agents. There was a lot of bad blood, was the exact word they used, between him and other NBA agents. And that's just because that business is very competitive. You know, you're recruiting clients, and they're like sharks out there, and there's a lot of animosity when you take clients or steal clients. Ironically, Kevin Durant, free agent coming up, former Rob Pelinka client who's now with Roc Nation Sports. So all of this was going on, and Magic alluded to the fact that he didn't feel like Genie had vetted Rob thoroughly. Mm. And Magic alluded to the fact that he had been told by agents who called him after he took the job that Rob had some baggage there. We know that I know for a fact from sources that the San Antonio Spurs didn't want to deal with Rob in the offseason when it came to Kawhi Leonard. I know that Dell Demps wanted to deal with Magic Johnson and not Rob all the time at the trade deadline this year when it came to the Anthony Davis talks.
Interesting.
Another reason why they broke up. And then finally what I heard was, you know, Rob had to sell his company, his sports agency, and had to divest out of it and get all of his clients to other people at his agency. He is fully vested and in his role as a general manager. I see him there sitting just behind the court side every single game. He's in the tunnel. He's talking to players. He's very vested. Magic is still having to be Magic. He's got multiple business ventures. He owns a lot of sports teams. He's a huge personality.
About 15 seconds. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, he has conflicts he has to make. And so throughout the organization at the practice facility, people with the Lakers organization, including Rob himself, were making comments that Magic's not here. Magic is a absentee executive, and we're saying those whisperings and secrets.
Okay.
That was some of the backstabbing they were talking about that Magic did not like.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.